Welcome back to readaboutit.com, everybody. Reed Kerr here with you. Thanks for coming to the website. If, by the way, you're pulling this interview up somewhere that's not the website, feel free to check out the writings, the humor, the other stuff over at readaboutit.com. It's readaboutit.com. There's all sorts of other podcasts, interviews with other writers, comedy stuff, all sorts of great things over there. Please check it out. That is my home on the web. Today, an interview with a writer I did. I did this a little while back. Real life intruded, and this interview actually sort of lingered there for about a month after we did it. But when I went back and listened to it the other day to put the article up, I was really amazed at how well it went. Alex Irvine, my guest on Read About It, because I originally found out about Alex, his comic writing. He's written lots of other things. But his comic book writing, I picked up the trade paperback of Hellstorm, which I've always loved that character. And it's the dealings with that character run wildly from one direction to the other, depending on who's taking him over. And I really like the take on it. And I'm not going to spoil the story for you. And I can't tell you what I most enjoyed about the story without spoiling it. So I'm just going to say that there was a certain point in that book where something was referred to, something having to do with a god that has never, ever been referred to in a Marvel comic before. And I thought at that point, I've got to talk to this guy. Alex Irvine, very nice guy. Talked to him about writing. As a writer, I'm always trying to, you know, plug guys for more information. He was very upfront about his writing process, how he does things. I'll give you a little audio here. One of the things he says he does, most writers don't.
I get better sentences, I get better drafts. I slow myself down enough that I think things through before I just write them.
Alex and I talked about comic books, his favorite comic books growing up, and even more importantly, which Marvel character he would love to write right now. And he says he would love to write this character because it's so difficult.
So he's a kind of a tough character to write, I think. I plan to actually find out just how tough he is to write.
He says he's got a great idea for him or her, and he would not go any farther into that, which I understand completely, but he's got some good stuff coming up. Also, he talked about the Avengers Assemble game, which is coming up on Facebook, probably to coincide with the movie. He wrote the dialogue for that. He had a hand in it. He'll talk all about that. And he writes, he writes novels, writes novellas, writes comics, writes for video games. He says some people write one thing, and it's okay. He's open for anything.
I think that's great, but every time some opportunity comes along and somebody says to me, hey, you want to write a Facebook game, or hey, you want to write a comic, you want to write a radio play or something like that, I think, yeah, I do. Let me try that and see what that's like and see how you tell a story that way.
He's a great storyteller in a variety of formats. And you know what? He's a heck of a nice guy on top of all that to give me a little bit of time to talk writing and everything else for him. So with no further ado, or a minimum of ado, just a slight ado, here on readaboutit.com, our podcast today with Alex Irvine. When did you first know that you wanted to write?
Well, I always sort of thought it would be cool to write. And when I was a little kid, I remember, I think I must have been in fifth grade. I had a friend named Kevin, and he used to write and draw this comic called Super Dude. And we did that for a while. We always read comics and books, too. I never really made much of a distinction between the two until I was older and I learned I was supposed to. But it was always, that kind of storytelling was always something that I did, but writing seriously, like writing and putting things in the mail and seeing if somebody would publish them, that I didn't start to do until much later in my early 20s, really. But the whole time in between, I would tinker with things and pick them up and put them down. And I came to writing by way of the theater, actually, because I was an actor for a while. And I decided I would write a play, and I wrote the play, and it was terrible, but I thought this writing thing is kind of cool, and so I kept exploring that, and this is where it led.
Do you remember what your first published work was, the first thing you got paid for?
Yeah, the first thing I got paid for was a short story called Rossetti Song in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, and I've published a bunch of stories in there since. It's a great magazine, and everybody should read it. It's where a lot of the, especially in science fiction and fantasy, a lot of the field's most interesting writers, not including myself, have broken in through FMSF. And everybody who takes the genre seriously should read it, I think. And that was my first story, and also I think my second and third were to FMSF too. And it came out in March of 2000 was the first story I ever published and got extra money for.
How about your first rejections? Do you remember those first set of rejection slips you got?
Oh, yeah. Well, geez, I don't know. I had something that popped into my head, but I'm not sure if that's actually the first ones. I used to send stuff to Asimov's and get rejected pretty routinely. This is back when I was in college. I finished 2, 3, 4 stories, maybe just kind of dinking around and trying to figure out how it all works in college. And I sent those to Asimov's. I sent them to Playboy. I sent them to Where Else? Omni, I think, when that was still around. And later met Ellen Datlow, and she published a couple of my stories when she was doing sci-fi.com. But back then, I was just one more guy in the flesh that she bounced, and Gardner Dozois bounced, and everybody else bounced. So then I think I went away from it for a little while and didn't come back to it until the early 90s, and then I sort of started to publish after that.
Alex, tell me a little bit about your writing routine. Now, you're also a teacher, right? A professor? Assistant professor?
Until recently, yeah. I just actually left the University of Maine to write full-time.
Oh, okay. Even better. So what's your routine like? Do you have a certain number of pages you do every day? Do you have a certain time of the day where you do it? How do you approach that?
Well, there's... everybody's got limitations in their day, and I try to work with mine, you know, like I'm sure everybody else does. I get up early in the morning because I have a 20-month-old baby, and I also have 10-year-old twins, and so the house gets moving. And I get the baby out to daycare, and then my wife is a high school teacher, and so she goes off to work, and then I pretty much have the day to write and also, you know, do stuff around the house. And there's a dog who's actually biting me on the foot right now who I have to deal with every day too. But the routine, so far as it is a routine, is I tend to write during the day, which is the opposite of what it used to be. I used to be a serious night owl, and write from sort of 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. used to be my most productive hours, and now by 9 a.m. I'm sort of fried, and I'm just staring at baseball scores on the internet during baseball season. But as far as what I try to do every day, it varies depending on the kind of project. I mean, if it's, you know, fiction, you might set yourself, you know, I want to finish this scene, or I want to have part of it scoped out, or I want to write this many pages. But those kind of limits can really kill you, because what if you say to yourself, I want to write 5,000 words today, and you do, and they're crap? Well, then you haven't gotten anything done. And so you have to kind of strike a balance between being productive and actually producing good stuff. And then if you're writing a comic or a game script or some other kind of thing, then the way you count it is totally different, and so your deadlines feel different too. That may sound like a kind of evasion, but the truth is that it's different every day. I just try to get things done, and it seems to work most of the time.
Let me ask you the one that all writers get about the ideas. I'm not going to ask you where you get them. I'm going to ask how you keep them. Do you carry them around with you? Do you keep them in your head? Do you write them down and come back to them later? How do you handle that process?
Well, again, that's highly variable. I have in my wallet little scraps of paper with strange things written on them. I'm looking at my desk right now, and it's got probably a dozen different notebooks on it that I have scribbled various things in at various times, and they're all shapes and sizes. And my computer has, I don't know, dozens of files that exist, because I was sitting there working on something else, and this idea or a sentence or a title or a thought or something popped into my head, and I opened up something just to write it down long enough, or I opened up something long enough to write it down before I forgot it, and then went back to the other thing. So probably it would be more efficient if I had a more consistent way of doing stuff like that, but I sort of do it however it comes to hand. And then, I mean, God, I don't know how many probably great ideas I've lost, you know, because I didn't empty out my pockets before I did the laundry or something. And so, I mean, I'm kidding, they probably weren't great ideas, but there's no real system. I'm probably the least systematic writer I know. I do like to write either when I'm alone in the house or out at a coffee shop, because if I'm alone in the house, then the people that I care about aren't there to distract me. And if I'm at a coffee shop, the sort of white noise of it gives me something to block out and focus on the writing. So those are my two favorite situations. I used to write a lot in bars, but again, with all the kids and stuff, it's not really possible anymore.
So of the thousands of people who claim to be sitting at Starbucks working on their novel, you actually are working on your novel at Starbucks then?
Yeah, well, not Starbucks. There's two coffee shops here in Portland that I tend to go to. There's Coffee by Design and Hilltop. Those are my two favorite places in Portland to go. I have written stuff in a Starbucks before.
But it came out all corporate for you? Is that?
It did, yeah. It was sort of polished and, and had no soul. So I got out of there, man.
Let me ask you this about getting an agent, keeping an agent. Do you have an agent?
Not anymore. I did.
Mm-hmm. To someone who's outside the industry, it always seems like, you know, everybody, you know, anytime you see someone in the entertainment industry, they're thanking their agent, their manager, and all of that. And what I'm finding from talking to writers is that it's not as important as we would think it would be, and it's even more important to have the right relationship and not just have a relationship. Is that close?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, Tim Powers gave me some advice about agents a long, long time ago. He said, a lot of people try to get an agent before they try to sell a book, and that's getting it backwards, because if you sell a book, you can get an agent. You call up an agent and you say, look, I sold a book. Do you want to take 15% just to help write up the contract? And most agents will say yes. And plus, the air of success about you because you sold a book makes you attractive to the agent. And now the flip side of that is you can work just as hard finding a decent agent as you can selling that first book, and then maybe the agent won't sell your book. So Tim always said, you know, go sell the book and then worry about an agent later. And so that's what I did. And it worked. I got an agent. And then the situation, I had that agent for 8 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then we parted ways. And he's not an agent anymore, actually. he's become a bicycle blogger and does some other things. But for the last 4 years, I've been working without an agent, and that has been actually okay, although I've been thinking about getting an agent again because as you get into doing more complicated projects, there's just a lot of questions that agents know how to ask that I don't, or that I don't feel really thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I will get one again, but I sure haven't had any trouble getting work without one. Now, bringing it back around to people, you know, who are trying to break into the industry and things like that, I would say working on publishing, the agent thing will take care of itself. Because when you start selling stuff and publishing stuff, you'll know people who have agents, and their agents will ping you and ask if you have an agent, and that problem will shake itself out. Worry about the publishing.
Okay. Alex, let me take this back to comics now, because that's how I first saw your work. Let me kind of take you back on comics. You talked about fourth and fifth grade, you know, being a big fan and writing them and drawing them and all that. Do you remember what got you into them? What you were reading at that point that made you a fan?
Well, I remember, I always feel a little weird about this. Okay. Because the comics that I really, really loved when I was a kid, were tended to be, for some reason, the licensed ones. I loved Micronauts. I loved Rom the Space Knight.
Oh, yeah.
I had Rom the Space Knight toys, and I had this giant box full of Micronauts that in one of the great tragedies of my life, my mom sold at a garage sale because she thought I wasn't interested in them anymore. Then, you know, so I like Devil Dinosaur, I like the Godzilla comics, and so the superheroes I didn't connect with right away as much until I got a little bit older. And then, you know, then I went away from comics when I was in high school, and then when I was in college was when a lot of the more independent stuff started to go boom, and so then I started paying attention again, and then came full circle when I started writing comics. But, you know, I had this friend Kevin that I was telling you about and a couple others who were also really into comics, and we used to trade them around. And so all the stuff that you would expect for a kid growing up in the late 70s and early 80s. But the stuff, like I said, that really made an impression on me was Micronauts, Godzilla, Rom. And I will die happy if I ever get to write a Devil Dinosaur comic.
Well, now, Devil Dinosaur, it wasn't licensed, was it? They could still reprint those.
They could, but
but they won't.
A hardcover trade. That's a contradiction in terms there, but a hardcover collection of Devil Dinosaur just came out last year, I think, or was going to. And I would love to write more stories. And the character shows up every once in a while. He's in the Savage Land doing this or that, or mm-hmm. they do something else with him. But he hasn't had his own book in a long time, and I think. think it's time for Moonboy to make a comeback.
Absolutely. And see, and that's one of the, that's one of the shames. Now you have more access to, you know, to old comics than we've ever had. You have the Essentials lines and all of that, but but you can't, you're not going to get Micronauts, and you're not, you can't mention Rom. You can't even show him in a, you know, in a Marvel 2-in-1 because they don't own the rights anymore. And so it's like there's a portion of our childhoods, because I'm about your age, that's just gone. Even with the new attention to continuity, it ain't there.
Yeah. And that's a dance for them all the time. And especially because of, you know, well, I mean, Marvel's rights situation has been chewed over by people who know a lot more about it than I do, but that becomes tricky for creators, you know, because you go back to tell a story and you're like, oh, well, this guy was always working with this guy, but I can't use this guy anymore. And so then everybody has to, they have to retcon all these backstories, and then the fans freak out because they've got retconned, and it's a tricky spot to be in as a writer, because you're trying to please everybody and still write a story that's actually legal, which is one reason why it's fun to work outside of continuity and do the sort of Marvel Medics and noir and stuff like that.
And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Your comic work mostly has been outside of continuity, which gives you a lot more leeway than you would normally have. Do you like working like that? Would you like to get more into the mainstream continuity? Do you like the kind of areas that you've carved out? How do you like that?
Well, I think there's some interesting stuff about being a novelist and coming to comics, because as a novelist, you're used to writing stories that have a beginning, a middle, and an end, unless you're one of these writers of endless mystery or fantasy series, you know, and then you just bring everything to a pause for a minute before you write the next book. So this writing things with beginning, middle, and end is totally the opposite of what you do when you have a monthly comic. And so it's been cool for me to get into comics writing limited series that are self-contained stories and that also are outside the continuity, because I had particular things that I wanted to do with each of the characters in the Daredevil and the Hellstorm and the Iron Man books. I was able to do those because there was some stuff that I could forget about in continuity in each case, and I could tell the story that I wanted to tell. Now, yeah, monthly books would be really cool. I would totally do a monthly book if I could get all the other stuff off my desk and be able to do it. And I'm sure that's on the horizon. The interesting thing about that for me will be to realize that you're picking up something that somebody else has handed off to you, and that you're going to later hand off again to the next guy who comes along and writes it. And that the character has a life beyond any of the writers who work on him or her. And the kind of storytelling is completely different. So I'm looking forward to doing it. I think it's going to be really cool.
Let me ask you this: who would you, other than Devil Dinosaur, of course, who would you like to write? What's your dream job to take over the reins?
Doctor Strange is definitely one. I have some of the world's greatest unknown Doctor Strange idea. I'd love to do Iron Man. The truth is, I wouldn't turn anybody down. They're all such iconic characters. The Fantastic Four, would love to dig into the Fantastic Four. But, you know, all those characters are being well-treated right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the writers are doing a fine job on them right now. So, you know, everything is okay. But one of these days, those guys will go off somewhere else. I would love to do... Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler had a solo book that I don't think was much of a success, and I have what I think are some pretty cool stories to tell with that character. So we'll see if one of these days I get a chance to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you mentioned Doctor Strange, because he is a part of the Marvel Universe and the continuity. You know, he's the Sorcerer Supreme. Everybody knows him. He gets called into everybody else's book, but his own book, and every time every different iteration of his book never seems to sell that well. Nothing ever seems to happen in that book that affects everything else for such a character who is, you know, such an ingrained part of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's certainly true. And I think that part of that is because the Marvel Universe loves magic, but is never quite sure how it wants magic to fit in with all the metahuman stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, all right, he's a Sorcerer Supreme. You know, he can you know, almost literally move heaven and earth. So what challenges this guy? And how do you place limitations on him and avoid the kind of storytelling where you're like, oh no, Doctor Strange is in terrible trouble until he remembers this one ability that he has that will, of course, annihilate his enemy.
Right.
So he's a kind of a tough character to write, I think. I've been planning to actually find out just how tough he is to write.
I hope so. Let me ask you this. You talked about, you know, growing up reading comics and something else about your work that I've noticed. You know, you talked about reading the licensed projects and all that. You've done some of that. You got a Star Wars book coming up, Transformers. You've written for Marvel and all that. Do you think starting as a comics fan and a sci-fi fan, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, continued ongoing stories, do you think that gives you more of a respect for continuity and ongoing stories, you know, in stories that never end, I guess, stories that run from one book to the next? Does that give you more of a respect for that starting with comics?
I don't know. It might. I mean, it's just always the way that those stories were told. And so when I read those stories, I was like, oh, well, these stories are told this way. And it never occurred to me to think about them in a different way. It never occurred to me to think about whether or not they should be respected, you know?
Yeah.
So the question, I guess all genres train their readers, right? Comics do, science fiction does, horror does, romance does. The readers of all those different genres are trained in a certain way to by the conventions of the genre, and they're trained to value the conventions of the genre if they like that kind of literature. So probably the same thing happened to me with comics because I read a bunch of them when I was a kid.
It was strange for me when I realized it because I'm a huge fan of episodic storytelling in whatever medium it is. And so, you know, depending on who I've been hanging out with, you know, if my wife liked soap operas, I could see the benefit in soap operas. You know, I could see the story arcs. I could see that. You know, a friend of mine liked wrestling. I could see wrestling is just superheroes with less clothes on, basically. And, you know, I could see that. That's kind of starting with comics sort of trained me to be able to see the ongoing episodic storytelling that's, you know, that's a part of things that are not just comics, I guess.
Yeah, I think that probably happened to me, too. And the other thing that happened is that, you know, watching TV series and stuff when you were a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And every week, what's Magnum P.I. going to do, you know? And so the serialized storytelling and ongoing storytelling has always been a part of my sort of cultural landscape, you know, and my reading. And so that's just a kind of story that's out there. And when I run across it, I know how to read it and I know how to enjoy it.
Let me get to the other thing, and actually, I had contacted you about setting this up, and then like the day after we had set up the interview, you made the announcement on Facebook of something extraordinarily cool that's about to happen, so I got lucky on that one. The Avengers Alliance game that's coming out, explain what this is. This is one of those games for Facebook, right? Explain what it is and how you got into it, what your role in this is going to be.
Well, I wrote it, which is to say I wrote the dialogue and put together the story. A lot of people put together the story, but I was one of them. And there's more news coming down the pike about this game and about some other things. So I have to sort of step carefully here.
Okay.
But the sort of short version of it is when you play Avengers Alliance, all the stuff that characters say in the game is going to be stuff that I wrote, and the story is the first of what are going to be a number of related stories. I can't say all that much more about it right now, although I'd really love to. So maybe we can angle the question around another way and I can tell you more.
Okay. Well, let me start with this. How did you get involved with that? Because I don't, you know, getting involved with a Facebook video game, I don't see a lot of job postings for that. How did they seek you out, and how'd you get in on this one?
Well, it was thanks to the magazine Fantasy and Science Fiction, which I was talking about before. Another guy who publishes an FNSF some is Mark Laidlaw, who is a writer of Valve and is responsible for Half-Life 2 and a bunch of other awesome games. And Mark and I have been sort of convention friends for a long time, and he emailed me one day and he was like, hey, did you ever think about getting into games writing? And I was like, well, I don't know. And he said, well, can I put you in touch with a friend of mine who might be looking for a writer for this project? And I said, well, sure. And that turned out to be the guys who were making Alliance. And when they found out that I had written some comics for Marvel and knew something about Marvel, then it was so much the better. And the two different, well, two of the different parts of my writing career to this point sort of came together and fed into this game. It was a happy accident. Yeah, they were looking for somebody who could do some game writing, and they got somebody who knew some comics too. So, and I got to try a totally new and different kind of storytelling, because this is really a different kind of Facebook game. You know, it's not just click and 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 then you get a trophy. You know, you are going to be fighting, you are going to be completing missions, you are going to be doing all this stuff, but the story is for a social game, the story is pretty intense and deep. I think there are, I've read somewhere that there's like 1,000 lines of dialogue in the average movie, or a little bit less, and I think there's almost 6,000 lines of dialogue in the launch material for Alliance.
And is that all yours?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not every single, you know, there's some stuff that somebody else was like, hey, can we put this in? And so we did. But yes, generally.
Mm-hmm. You of the comics series that you've written for Marvel, you know, you wrote, mm-hmm. You wrote out of continuity stuff for Iron Man and Daredevil, two guys who've already had their own movie. You yep. are doing the writing for the Avengers Alliance thing, which comes out on Facebook and is one of the summer blockbusters coming up this next year. Do you feel like you're right at the verge? Because it sounds to me like you're right at the edge of breaking in to the big time, as we'll call it. You're right there. You're handling those characters. You just yeah. you're almost there. Does it feel like you're getting closer to being a full time guy there?
I mean, I guess that, you know, when you start writing, you're always, there's always a part of the back of your mind that's thinking, yeah, when I finish this story, Spielberg's going to call. and, you know, then years go by and Spielberg doesn't call, but along the way, all these other really cool things happen. And so, you know, I'm actually in a pretty good spot as a writer. I write lots of different things. They're all interesting to me, and I make a living at it, and it's pretty cool. Now, would I love to write movies? Sure. Sure. It's not something that I've pursued aggressively, which is kind of difficult to do when you live in Maine. And I think that I'm not quite sure how the pipeline works to develop, you know, comics writing and game writing into writing for screens. I'm hoping I'll find that out too over the next couple of years, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, I would love to write an Iron Man movie. You know, the first Iron Man movie was terrific, so they obviously didn't need me on that one. but I don't know how many more are going to be coming up, and I'd like to take a whack at one of those for sure.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask about, you, of course, you're a novelist. You've written articles. You've written other things. You've written comics. Mm-hmm. Now you've written for a game. How do you? Is it a conscious decision changing your style for the medium? I mean, did you, when you started writing for this game, did you instinctively know what you needed in the spaces they gave you? Did you have to talk to somebody about it? How did you adapt your style?
Well, when you take on any different kind of new project, it takes a little time to get your feet on the ground in it. And so you write around and you try this and you look at it, and the other people involved in the project look at it, and they're like, well, maybe it should be more like this. Because I think at the beginning of Alliance, there were a lot of moving parts. They were trying to develop a really interesting user experience, trying to put the story together, and there were all these other game mechanics things that were going on, and then there were, you know, broader concerns about what other projects it might or might not be related to as it was being developed. So I would say, okay, let's try this, and we'd try that, and then we'd all look at it, and we'd say, okay, I like this part of it, I don't like this part of it, and then we'd go off and do it some more, and gradually it all got ironed out together so that the gameplay and the story and everything worked together. And that's a new thing for me, is this figuring out how to make story and gameplay go together. You know, when I started writing comics, I had to figure out how to make story and art go together, and so I started to figure that out. And so I've always liked trying new kinds of writing. I know some people who are perfectly content to write the same kind of thing for their entire lives. They don't want to write comics. They don't want to write TV shows or games or anything else. They want to write fiction. Or the other way around. They only want to write comics or whatever else. And I think that's great. But every time some opportunity comes along and somebody says to me, hey, you want to write a Facebook game? Or, hey, you want to write a comic? You want to write a radio play or something like that? I think, yeah, I do. Let me try that and see what that's like and see how you tell a story that way. So, but it is an adaptation, not just of style, but of figuring out how, what are the goals of this kind of storytelling? How do you get the story across to the reader?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fascinating to figure that part of it out.
Tell me what else you got going on this year. I checked on your blog. See, you've got a couple of novels coming out this year. Are those already finished in the can?
Yeah. Well, there's a novella, Mare Ultima, which is a combination and expansion of two stories, again, from FNSF. It's a sort of high fantasy, but a kind of rugged and grueling one. And that comes out from PS Publishing in the UK, I believe in April. And then there's the Star Wars book, which comes out in September, which all of the Old Republic fans out there are going to want to check out. And then I wrote a D&D book. It's my second one, but it's the first one in the Forgotten Realms. And it's going to be an ebook exclusive, which is one more interesting experiment because I never had one of those before. And so I'm going to see how that goes and what it's like to watch the book go out there into the world when the book doesn't actually physically go out there into the world. That one comes out, I believe, in October. Wizards of the Coast has just moved a bunch of their books around, so I'm not 100% sure about that one. But it has to do with the Drow with Menzel Berenson and all sorts of shenanigans there. So those are the three books I have coming out this year. And then there's this game, and then I'm also working on some other projects that I probably shouldn't say anything about yet.
You mentioned the ebook that's coming out. Just as a reader, have you bought into the whole ebook thing, or do you still need the physical books?
I still prefer physical books. I do a lot of reading online because people send reference documents and stuff like that, and they end up in Dropbox or on Google Docs, or somebody sends me a PDF, and so I've just had to get used to reading online. But given my druthers, I still like to sit with a physical book. And I also when I have time, I like to write longhand.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, do you, when you finish writing longhand, do you type it yourself? Or do you have someone else type it for you?
Oh, no, I do it. That's the first revision.
Oh, okay.
When it goes from the notebook into the computer. And I often don't have time to do it that way when, the job is on a tight deadline or something like that. But I much, much prefer to compose longhand. I get better sentences. I get better drafts. I slow myself down enough that I think things through before I just write them. When I was teaching, I always used to tell my students that, too. It's like, put away the computer. Sit down and engage this thing word by word by word. Because most of you can type faster than you can think. And so if you sit down and make yourself slow down, then you get better thinking and you get better writing. And I believe that.
Hmm.
It's not true all the time for everybody, but I know it's true for me. So,
when you do your revisions, how far do you go before you go back and make your revisions? Is it like today? Do you do yesterday's? Do you wait until you finished a section before you go back? How often do you do those write-ups?
Usually what I do is I don't do extensive revisions until I finish a draft because it's too easy to get into this death spiral of constantly fixing the thing that you just wrote and never getting on to the next thing. And there are thousands and thousands of unfinished novels out there in the world because people exhausted themselves doing that. Now, when I'm going along and I realize that I've written something and I like it and I want to keep it and I think it's the right thing, but it doesn't work with something that's earlier, I'll go back to earlier in the manuscript and I'll write myself a note there saying, okay, got to fix this because of this other thing that happens later. But then I go back to where I was and I go on. And so there's lots of notes to self, hundreds of them as I go on through a book. And then when I get to the end, I put the thing away and I let it rest and I think about it for a couple of weeks. And then I go back and I start fresh and I tear it apart as it goes into the computer.
Alex, I appreciate it, man. This has been very enlightening. Thank you for dropping in with me.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for thinking of it.
That was about a half an hour with Alex Irvine, a very patient and nice guy. Thanks to him for that, and one hell of a writer also. Like I said, he's a guy I first discovered because picking up on a whim, that Hellstorm trade paperback, some great stuff. And he's a guy, as he talked about in the interview there, I could see this guy making it. I mean, making it huge. He's
He's just done 6,000 lines of dialogue for Avengers Assemble. I think they're trusting him with the characters. So, and it'll be a great thing. It'll be a hell of a ride. Can't wait to see it. Thanks to Alex for dropping in with us, and I hope you guys have enjoyed it here at readaboutit.com. More posting pretty much every day. So, as always, you can tweet me at Twitter, at readaboutit, which is R-E-I-D, about it. Also over at Facebook, or just come by readaboutit.com and poke me there. It seems like everybody else does. So my crowning achievement this week, I had one of the characters on Comic Book Men call me a tool. So, hey, you know what? Hey, it beats working. All right, thanks to Alex Irvine for dropping in at readaboutit.com. Good luck to him in the future. And we'll be picking up the stuff and definitely playing the Avengers Assemble game when it comes out. More coming up on readaboutit.com later on. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you. Drive through.